This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Now let's move on over to the defense. Reddington isn't disputing that Lindsay Clancy killed her three children. He offered to put it in writing. His entire case is that the woman who did it wasn't there, that she'd been begging for help for months, and every single person around her missed it. We're digging into the defense of Lindsay Clancy now. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, with us as always to help break down these tough cases. She told her husband at the end of December that she was having thoughts of hurting her kids. She checked herself into a psychiatric hospital on New Year's Eve. 19 days after they discharged her, her children were dead. The case should be a referendum and spotlight on our broken mental health system. But it's not. It's going after another victim of the mental health system. Will her story help people see the reality of how broken this system is? Bob, do you think? I mean, I know if people are paying attention to it closely and are objective, they will hopefully see it. Do you think this will shine a bigger light on it beyond the true crime fans who are watching this sort of thing as closely as we are?
God, I hope so. I really do. You know, it's like I've been working in the criminal justice system for decades, and my biggest frustration always in dealing with prosecutors was getting them to acknowledge, first and foremost, that mental illness is a real thing. I think if we were able to kind of calculate the crimes that are committed and put them into either one of three buckets, which is addict, mental illness or defect, or both, that 90% of crimes and the people that are committing them would fall into one of those three buckets.
Yeah.
And you know, trying to get to humanize defendants with prosecuting attorneys in this, because of the shift to where truth is not what's at stake, it's convictions, because that's what gets people elected. When that happened, and that happened long, long ago, because make no bones about it, prosecutors are elected officials. It is a political job. I'm tough on crime is always the rallying cry. And what I do to prove that is I show you my prosecutor's record is, you know, I have a 98% conviction rate. That's what they do to sell themselves, that they're tough on crime, because people want to live in safe communities.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's an easy sell for a prosecutor. I'm going to make where you live safer because I'm going to put the bad guys away. And when you have that battling with the concept of reality.
Yeah.
And the concept of that we're dealing with human beings in every different case is its own story. Like there are no two cases are the same. It's like I was going through our live on Clancy and a lot of people in chat. Yeah, it reminds me of Andrea Yates down in Texas back in the early 2000s. I'm like, no.
they're all
different cases. They're all different circumstances.
And if you're just following it as a bumper sticker, unless you're into this stuff, that's most of the general public is a bumper sticker. It is I'm tough on crime. Well, that's great. You're tough on crime, but let's actually define what's a crime, right? And what's just padding the record here to show that you have another person behind bars, whether they should be or not. That's not necessarily dealing with reality. And this is one of those cases where, you know, it is not Andrea Yates. And we've seen plenty of cases where the mom should go, you know, take a flying leap off a cliff and just be gone for the monstrous shit that they've done while being sane. Ruby Frankie comes to mind. There's several others. But this is a case where Lindsay Clancy did everything right. That's what strikes me about this. This is not someone who just sat there and went, well, this is me, deal with it, and then crazy things happened. This is someone who recognized it enough to have 13 psychiatric drugs, 13 scripts, 13 different times a doctor had to go to their pad and go, oh, you should have this. And throughout those 13 times, they didn't communicate with the other doctors. It also wrote her scripts as well. That's part of the civil suit. That's a whole conversation unto itself. But this is a case where this woman exhausted all of the roads to go down. And at every single turn, she was failed. Now, I don't look at these doctors and go, I'm sure you were conniving and trying to kill her and make her do crazy. No, but the system is broken the way it communicated. It could have caught itself. It did not. But because the system failed her in all those different ways, you put anybody, take postpartum psychosis out of it. Take bipolar out of it. Take you or me, take a person who can't be pregnant and let's go on a cocktail of 13 different benzos, SSRIs, antipsychotics, and you name it over the course of a few months. And let's see how you're doing on the other side of it. I'm going to guess a lot like Lindsay Clancy, no matter how much you love your children or anything around you, you're not going to be thinking clearly. That just seems to be a factual piece of this case. But for some reason, it's up for debate, as if that's not even a factor in this damn thing. A lot of people watching this, you know, are on something a doctor gave them. How can the state pretend that this wouldn't play a major role in her behavior, Bob?
It's a great question, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it lacks humanity for me.
It does.
You know, like that part of, you know, the white hat, which is, you know, what they consider the prosecutors to be in this country. You know, they have a duty to the citizens of this country, and to be lacking humanity in doing that job is unforgivable in my eyes. It just is.
I mean,
that's not to say that there's not great prosecutors in this country and
yeah,
good people doing the jobs, but you know, when it breaks down to the point where you're asking yourself, like, who looked at this? Like, at the end of the day, who rubber stamped this thing to try her on this case without taking into consideration what they know are facts?
Yeah.
They know exactly. They got all of her medical records. This isn't a mystery to them. They know what the background is, and they're choosing to act as if psychosis doesn't allow for a person to put a logical thought together during while it's coursing through their minds. And it's disingenuous, and they know it. And they're going to go into that courtroom, and they're going to put on doctors who I'm assuming are going to be completely full of shit. Like, any doctor that's going to be testifying on behalf of the state in this trial, that it's going to get up there and say that, no, that's not possible. If you're in the state of psychosis, you can't possibly put together logical thoughts. You couldn't possibly premeditate this kind of thing, are completely full of shit, and they should lose their license to practice. Yeah.
They're the types that are on the commercials going, tell your doctor that this is right for you, where it's like, they'll take the payday. They'll do whatever they need to do. I mean, and there's shitty doctors out there like that. That's why we're in a state. And I'm not saying the doctors that were her doctors did that, but when you have expert witnesses being called and such, if you have somebody that's going to go up on the stand, there's no psychological doctor worth their weight in salt that could go up and say that someone in an active psychosis couldn't premeditate things, couldn't plan things. Look at all of the cases where we do deal with psychopaths that are premeditating shit left and right, and they're able to mingle into society and nobody's the wiser. That's how this shit works. And why this is such a mystery, I don't know. But clearly, I mean, we still have states in the union that don't even recognize an insanity defense in any capacity.
Idaho,
exactly. I mean, that and that may be shocking to some people, but it's true. We are very behind the times, to, I think, put it nicely, in our court system of what we recognize as the root cause and problems of the crimes that we face that are committed. And I don't know why we, in a case like this, she's not asking, let me be free and go live a life and love. She's like, lock me away in a mental institution for the rest of my life. I'm cool with that. They literally, in so many words, came to them and said, she's cool with that. Can't we just do this this way? And the DA in the court said, nope, we're going full bore, pedal to the metal. You are an evil bitch and you must go to prison. That to me has just been baffling. Are you surprised, Bob, as a defense attorney, that this made this all the way to trial, despite the concessions that she and her team themselves have given? We know she did it. She says she did it. She's suffering horribly through all of this too. She doesn't want, she's just lock her away in a safe place, not in a prison. That's not a safe place for someone who's done this. Why was that a bridge too far for the prosecution here that we got to a trial? Are you surprised we're going to trial?
No, I'm not.
No,
that's how the system works, man. Like, the system is broken. Like many of our systems in this country, the criminal justice system is broken. It's that thing that I was talking about. Like my biggest thing that I was smashing my head against a brick wall during my career was the fact that I could not get the prosecutors to acknowledge that mental illness is an actual thing and they have to take it into consideration when deciding whether or not to charge people.
Yeah.
You know, take it into consideration. Like when I was starting to wind up my practice in terms of like retiring, a prosecutor that ended up winning on this is not something I typically do, but she was running on the platform that she was going to acknowledge addiction and mental health in her term as prosecutor. And I was all about it. I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. I've been waiting for this prosecutor for my entire life as a lawyer. And I'm going to stick her yard sign in my yard because I want her to win because that's how important it is. And she did win. And then she did what she said she was going to do. There is now a mental health court. Mm-hmm. And like every state, every county has to have a mental health court because it's the only way, because there you're having social workers involved with it. There's people that are not lawyers and judges and cops and prosecutors that actually understand what's going on with people that are working to try to make people better. To help people, to help them with the mental illness, because punishment ain't it. Mm-hmm. Like throwing somebody who's mentally ill in prison is the exact opposite of what needs to be done. Like if you don't give a shit about people and crimes are black and white, oh, you committed the crime, put them away. I don't give a shit. See you later. Well, good on you. Like that's not how I live my life. I value humanity far more than that. And, you know, and I'm not going to judge people on how they, you know, how they think about it. But like, for me, I care about humanity. Like to me, it's important. Like I see a glaring gaping hole in the system that needs to be fixed. And there's a way to go about doing it. It just has to come about. There have to be people that are willing to do it on that side of it. And so when I started seeing it happening on a small scale, at least it gave me hope. You know what I'm saying? At least it gave me some hope. So the hope is, like you said, Tony, getting beyond the true crime fans that are going to be paying attention. Will this case resonate nationally to the extent where people that don't watch true crime will see it and they'll be like, wow, holy shit. That really makes me think. Because I'm going to tell you right now, this country and frankly, the entire world, we are teeming with mental illness.
Yes.
Like mental illness is not getting better. We are fucking filled, pardon my French, we are filled with crazy in this country. Look at the news every single day. And that's scratching the surface of the amount of crazy that is going on in this country on a daily basis. People have lost their minds.
It's the root cause of 90 some percent of the cases that we talk about. 100%. And yet the court system itself treats it like it's almost non-existent in some areas. And as a majority of the country, I would say it treats it like that across the board. Its default mode is not to identify or look in that area when that is the root cause. It's almost like going to a fire. Someone's house is burning down and something going, well, clearly there's flames flying out of the house. Well, have you checked the mouse traps? Do you think the mouse traps are the problem? It's like, we're not talking about infestation of rodents. There's a house fire right here. But those mice are going to eat shit in the pantry. That's not what we're talking. And that seems to, it seems to be at this point in our history, chosen ignorance, if you will, because it's an icky topic. It is somewhat more complex and difficult to understand. It's not as black and white as we like things to be, but our society needs to step up and go, yeah, most of the cases that we discuss fall in that area. And it doesn't give anybody a pass for their crimes, but it also doesn't make everything black and white either. If we're going to fix anything, we have to identify what the actual problems are and not treat them all as the same, which it feels like they're doing here. Patrick Clancy is testifying. That's her husband. There is some ambiguity right now. The Boston Globe reporting yesterday that they're divorced. Up until this point, we thought that they were still married. I don't know the answer to that. That's what the Globe had reported. Either way, I don't think it necessarily means a whole lot. She's never going to be in a state to be out, and it's understandable why someone would divorce, but still very much stand by their wife's side, their former wife's side, if that's in fact what the title is today, because he empathizes with her. He understands what she went through. He was right there. He was closer to this than any other living person, not the DA, not the judge, not the jurors, not the justice system. He was there. He's standing by her side. He's saying he forgives her because he understands why this happened and how she was failed. How much of a not guilty, guilty verdict depends on his testimony, Bob?
I think it's huge. I think it's an absolutely huge thing. I think that him standing by her, because like you said, he had a front row seat. And not only that, I mean, he's the one making the phone calls. Like when she gets on the Seroquel, it's him, Patrick, making the phone calls to the doctor saying, I don't know what you got her on, but she's 10,000 times worse than prior to you giving it to her. And what do? They up it from 50 milligrams of Seroquel to 400 milligrams. This, like, he was actively working with her to try to get her better. Like make no bones about it. I mean, she put herself in inpatient for 5 days, it turned out to be, because she didn't know what was happening. And then like this, like when people are sitting there telling me that she was a nurse and she understands how the drug, you just don't understand mental illness. When like you are the people that are saying that, well, she was a nurse, she understood, she was pill seeking. I'm like, what on God's green earth are you talking about?
Yeah, she wanted to go get hopped up on 13 different drugs. Right, like, that's what she was.
People that need to watch the trial, T. Like, because they just don't. They're not dealing with the reality of it. And here, before we move on to the next thing, so Patrick is huge.
Yeah,
I thought it would be very instructive. It's not super lengthy, and I'll kind of break it down. I want to read the jury instruction in terms of lack of criminal responsibility so that people going into this trial will understand where the burdens lay, who's got the burdens, and what has to be shown by the defense prima facie, meaning on the front end, before the burden shifts to the state. So it'll be good, and I'll run through it quick. So the jury instruction is called lack of criminal responsibility, which in some states is not guilty by reason of insanity. So if the Commonwealth has proved the elements of the offense by beyond a reasonable doubt. So just so you know, going into this trial, the state is still going to, even though Lindsay is admitted, everybody knows that she did the acts, they still have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So that part of the trial is going to take place. If you're wondering why, that's why, because they have to still prove it up and they have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So if those elements are proven, the Commonwealth must also prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was criminally responsible at the time of the alleged offense. Not what she's like now, not what she was like before, but on the day of, at the time of the offense. Under the law, the person is not guilty if they lacked criminal responsibility when they committed the offense. This is sometimes referred to as guilty by reason of insanity or not guilty by reason of insanity. There is no burden on the defendant to prove that they lacked criminal responsibility. the Commonwealth may meet its burden of proving a defendant was criminally responsible for their conduct in either of two ways. The first way is for the Commonwealth to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not suffer from a mental disease or defect at the time of the alleged offense. They're not going to be able to meet that burden. All right. So that one, we know from her medical records that she was definitely diagnosed with PPD and as well as onset bipolar.
Yep.
So a mental disease or defect need not fit into a formal medical diagnosis. It is a legal term, not a medical term. It does not, however, include an abnormality that presents itself only by repeated criminal or otherwise antisocial behavior. It is for you, remember this is a jury instruction, to determine from the evidence whether the defendant had a mental disease or defect at the time of the alleged offense. The second way for the Commonwealth to prove a defendant was criminally responsible for their conduct is for the Commonwealth to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that even if the defendant suffered from a mental disease or defect at the time of the alleged offense, the defendant nonetheless retained the substantial, and this is the most important language, this is where the case is going to live. The defendant nonetheless retained the substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of their conduct and to conform their conduct to the requirements of the law. Okay, so it goes on, but that is the heart of it. That goes to the phone data. That's where the state is living. They're going to say, look, she had the capacity to understand. She sent her, like their story is they sent her husband off to the furthest restaurant away, which was only a 9-minute drive.
It wasn't far. Yeah.
It wasn't far, you know, but like, that's their story. Like that she did this planning, that this is premeditated. That shows beyond a reasonable doubt that she had the substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of her conduct. A lot of states don't have that aspect of it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but Massachusetts does. And, you know, what goes on to say after that, it says to establish that the defendant had the substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of their conduct, the Commonwealth must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant appreciated, that is, that the defendant knew or understood in some meaningful way that their conduct was either illegal or wrong. So that's where this case is going to live. This is going to be a battle of the experts. And this is where the people are going to be, well, she was Googling restaurants and like she sent them away. Like that's where those people are going to live there. They're going to be, that proves it. And that's where I'm saying we have to get the experts that are going to say, okay, take a step back, take a breath. People that are in psychosis can have rational thoughts.
Yeah.
They can, but see the problem for the state is if the jury comes to believe the fact that she was having these auditory hallucinations, which are different than thoughts. So like, if you look at some of the things that she's quoted as saying, sometimes it's I when she's saying something, and sometimes it's you when it's the voice speaking to her. She's like, you are never going to get better. You have to kill yourself. You have to kill the kids in order to be able to kill yourself. Like these, like this is the voice that she's hearing. And if there's experts that are able to get people to understand that there are people that exist in this world that have mental illness wherein you cannot delineate reality from what is going on in your mind. It becomes so blurred that you have no idea what's real and what's not real.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, but it's going to be a challenge, man, because Americans just don't think that mental health and mental illness is a thing. They just don't, unless they've experienced it firsthand.
Yeah. That in itself says a lot about how rampant our mental health problems are. The fact that there is such a barrier up in so many minds to accept the reality of it, that says a lot, despite how much of it is in every single one of our lives, every single day. I think most don't even realize it half of the time. I want to go into another section here. Your thoughts on the defense and where this is going in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. Go and give us your thoughts there right now.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.